Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2012. Lecture 9, delivered on September 19, 2012. The title of this lecture is Ratio Analysis.
Today, ratio analysis. In front of you is a sheet that I have handed out. On one side are the ratio formulas themselves. Standard stuff. There are a couple in there that you don't normally see in textbooks anymore, and I've included those because I'm an old person and I want you to know old ways that are still useful, some information that can be teased out. Now, quite honestly, there are dozens of financial ratios, literally, and some of them, I don't know, I just never got much out of them when I was using them myself. But I've included a couple that I did use that are not typically taught anymore. The first thing that we want to do is find a company. And why did that suck? Okay, well, I guess we'll just do it this way. And the first thing we want to do, again, is select a company that we're going to analyze. And we are going to use financial statements from the Edgar system in the Securities and Exchange Commission. I would caution against using the financial statements that you can get from places like Google and Yahoo Finance. The reason being that they pick up the data from the Edgar filings and repeat it. But I have seen a consistent flaw in the information that is handed off into the Google and Yahoo financial statements. There are a couple of lines that come up as zeros or as a dash that aren't a dash at all. And I'm going to show you that just a second here. I'll show you why that can be a rather important thing. But the first thing is we're going to go to Edgar. Edgar is the electronic system that is used by all public companies that report under the Securities Exchange Act of 1934 and the Securities Act of 1933. It's an electronic system where you fill in, basically, it's not exactly like that. You fill in the blanks and it's an electronic representation that goes to Edgar and then it comes out of Edgar for the end users looking like the old paper versions we used to file back in the day. Now, I used to file the old paper versions, and then Edgar came in when I was a consultant, and I was one of the first electronic filing agents in the Edgar system. So I made some money because it was basically companies didn't have anyone who knew how to do this new electronic filing system, and I could do it, so made a few bucks that way. And then it got sort of taken over by these high-powered accounting firms and law firms that do it all now, and they kicked my butt out of the business. But this is Edgar, and it's just, you can go to Google or Bing and say just Edgar SEC, and it'll take you here. Now, the first thing we'll want to do is we'll want to go to the company or fund name. Is there somebody? Okay. And we're going to probably, let's look up something that is of an S&P 500 company. And for the purposes of today, since I'm in a shopping mood, I think I'll do Macy's. Well, that sucked. Let's try that again. Ticker symbol. Macy's ticker symbol is M. You know what? Try it this time. There's your damn dinner. the heck was that all about? And you always want to make sure, watch it, because sometimes if you just type in a name, there could be more than one company that has that name or something like it. Also, some big companies, they have different companies that are affiliated with each other, and they have very similar names or the same name. You have to watch out and make sure that you're looking at the core company and not one of its subsidiaries or something like this. But sure enough, this is indeed Macy's. Now, the thing we're going to use are financial statements from a 10K. Remember that the 10K is an annual filing, audited financial statements. It's a great big monster document. It's got lots and lots in it. And we're going to go into it to find its financial statements. Okay. Now, notice along the way, we got some things like 144s. Now, those are insider sales. Those are reports of insiders seeking to get some of their stock released from Rule 144 restriction so that they can sell it. Now, that's not a horrible thing all the time. You know, if you are someone who has worked for a company and they paid you mostly in stock, well, that's restricted stock under Rule 144, but you can leak it out under the rules of Rule 144, under the guidelines of 144, but you have to do filings when you do that kind of thing. So just because you see all of these 144s doesn't mean that there's a bunch of insiders dumping their position. It could mean that, but it doesn't hardly ever mean that. I mean, I got Rule 144 stock once in a while. I didn't like doing it, but when companies were cash-strapped and they couldn't pay me, I'd take some stock, on some restricted stock, and I'd just wait and starve to death until a window opened when I could sell it, and then I'd file, and I'd get it opened up so that I could do it, get a lawyer to sign off that it was a legal release and all that. So these 144s, there's the Qs, those are the quarterlies, and those are there's those 8Ks. Remember I told you about the 8Ks, those things that are like non-recurrent happenings of the company? You see some of those, 11Ks, those are ESOP stuff, and 14A there, and an 8K. Where is it? Oh, there it is. Damn. Okay. Okay, documents. Okay, then. Look at all of these. A lot of these are incorporated by link. It used to be incorporated by reference. They weren't in the core 10K, but you had to incorporate by reference all these supplemental documents. The core is here, Form 10K. And as I said, this is actually filed like just electronic, and then it turns into the document that what we used to actually file, a paper document, back a long time ago. But now it's all electronics that just turn back into it. And you'll see that the 8K has got all kinds of information in it. Or I'm sorry, the 10K, where it's located, the official corporate name, a nice logo. They didn't used to let us do those logos. I remember they would have really bitched at us about that. And some disclaimers about forward-looking statements. Honestly, if you are doing research on companies, there are a lot of places you can go to get research on companies. But along the way, why don't you ask the company itself? This is where the company is actually making public filings. Keep in mind that this is not full of opinions of analysts and all of that. There are opinions in there, and they're clearly disclosed. But this is a document that they file with the SEC. Anymore, the SEC is pretty damn bitchy about you telling the agency the truth. And so you can hide, and you can shift, and you can do nuances. But man, it is actually a darn good document for finding out the core information about a company. What its business is, what its competitors do, what it does as what its plans are. In fact, there is one section in here, I can't remember if I mentioned it or not. I think I did, just passed over, but I'll mention it now. In the 10K, it's something called the MD&A, the Management Discussion and Analysis. It's a big, long introspection. The writers of it are the company's people or their lawyers, And they are brutal. They're honest. They talk about the company's internal operations, where they're going, why the numbers are what the way they are, what's if there's downturns, what that was all about, upturns, where they see the company going, projects. Even they begin to talk, they'll mention there are other places where you'll find this too, litigation that's going on. It's a long document, but it is also a glib document. Back in the day, and it's always been our tradition, in the MD&A, we really tell the investors, if they are interested enough to read it, which most aren't, even most of the analysts are on radio and TV and all that kind of stuff in the magazines, they don't read the MD&A. It's a long doc, a long piece in here, but it's worth looking at. And I'm going to show it to you here. I'll do this as a search. This is kind of a sloppy way to do this, but let me do. There it is, item 7. I couldn't remember what the item was. It's full of numbers, but it's also full of analysis, discussing. In other words, they're doing ratio analysis on themselves, like we do on the outside. And you can compare what you see to what they see, what you conclude against what they conclude. Look how long it is. It is just it's an ass beater of a part of it. It just keeps going and going like the Boom Boom Bunny. See it? It's like reading a book, a boring book, but a book. Okay? And so if you are looking for something honest, something that is the company talking about itself in a way where they have accountability to the Securities and Exchange Commission for being honest, there you go. It's something to look at. Interestingly, I will not mention his name, but there's a presidential candidate for the presidency, and again, I won't mention his name, Mitt Romney. He had said, "I retired from or resigned from Bain Capital, this private equity firm that he had founded in 1999." Anyone in his who has any sense, knowledge of the Edgar filing system can go and look. It lists him as the CEO of Bain Capital in the 2000, 2001, 2002, and 2003 documents, the filings on 10K, the filings with the SEC. So the question would be, which would you take as the correct statement? The individual saying this in a public forum or the SEC document. And this is just purely my judgment, I would say the SEC document would have to win on that one, because you can get in serious trouble by misreporting the top executive management of a company in an SEC filing. And I don't think there's any lawyer, any set of suits that would write one of these things that would knowingly misrepresent the CEO of a company in three consecutive annual filings. It just wouldn't. That just would be jaw dropping in the 21st century to do that. But that's just a judgment I would have on it. But again, I didn't want to mention any names of anyone that could have been. Okay, now get down here, work into item 8. Consolidated statements of income. There you go. There's your income statement. Consolidated balance sheet. There you go. I don't know if these might be a little bit summary for some of the stuff that we'll want to do, but there's your statements right there. Right there in the SEC filing. Now, I want to show you something here real quick. Give me a... Bear with me. I want to come in here, and I'm going to go to one of the popular financial websites, Google's finance website. It's finance.google.com. There's one that's very similar, finance.yahoo.com. And they're great, you know, when you really want some quick stuff. But what I want to do here is I want to dig up Macy's, and I'm going to show you something. Okay, there's Macy's. Now, that's great for us getting some quick flash data about the current situation. Remember, K's and Q's are filed, and you're looking at historical information. This gives you, at least right in here, it's right what's happening now. But let me look at the financials here. Now, remember that the financials are drawn from the Edgar documents. There's a sort of like an aggregating system that just sort of picks up the data and brings it over. I've used it on websites of mine for different things too. But let's have a look at something. I'll show you one rather interesting thing. I want you to look at this income statement very quickly here. No, I want the annual data. Sorry about that. Annual data, okay. Okay, now we're going to go back over to the Edgar document. Now I want to go back to the income statement. Whoops. Income statement. Okay. Well, let's look a little bit here. 2011, fiscal 2011, 26405. And let's see what Edgar says. 26405, sure enough. Yeah. Okay, we got now our cost of revenue, 15738, according to Google Finance. 15738, yeah, we're okay. Nothing big there. Your gross margin. Selling and administrative, 8281. Well, everything should be the same because it's picking it up. Yep. R&D, depreciation and amortization. Okay, well, let's get to operating income. 2411, let's make sure that they're both telling us the same thing. Operating income. Oh, wait. Okay, that's a little bit odd. Let's look at our interest expense. Interest expense, net operating. Hello. You see it? You see it? It loses it. That's not good, because interest expense is something we care about in financial analysis. How much the company's paying in interest versus how much it has in the line above it to pay interest with. That's called times interest earned. And somehow in these financials, there is a slip of a couple of numbers. They're just not there in the popular financials that you grab off the internet. That's why in our work, when you get to be professionals, you want to avoid these things like the Wikipedias and the Google Finances and Yahoo Finances and all that kind of stuff, and all these popular resources, because they're sloppy and there's not really any kind of a verification check going on in them, and you can end up getting information that is critically wrong in some regards. That's why, as pros, you will be the professionals of the future. Find the core. Find where the wellspring of information is. In other words, what we call the data wellhead. And that's what you use. In this case, they're drawing from Edgar, no doubt about it. It looks like it's just pulled line by line off Edgar, but there's glitches in it. And that makes it kind of a big problem. The same thing would be for a Wikipedia. Wikipedia is written by a core of about 1,500 really creepy human beings who do nothing else with their lives but put entries in there. Some of those people are very well paid to bias what they are saying in very dark ways. It's just the reality out there. When you are seeing commercial sites, you have to ask yourself, who's paying the bills? With something like Wikipedia, well, there's a problem there because you don't see any advertisements, and the guy who started this is very, very wealthy from doing it. So how did that happen? Just a warning to you. Now let's get down to some business here, or to business as we used to call it. Okay, Now, here at the top, and I'm going to just, let me get this god-awful Wikipedia, or Google Finance thing, really, off there. There we go. Okay. Now, and this is one of those things where I told you, you'll see different terminology, slightly different, or rather surprisingly different, from one financial statement to another, and from what I tell you or a textbook tells you to what you see in the real world. It's just that the terminology is somewhat different. Notice here that Macy's uses the term sales, but as you saw in the last lecture, revenue is the term that is used in others. Do they mean something different? Hell no. They mean the same thing. Okay, now, for the purposes of this, just scratch down some numbers, and we're going to just do 11 and 10 here, okay? Just 11 and 10, not the 2009 stuff for the fiscals, okay? And for the first line here, and I'm going to flip it over here, you'll want to write down for revenue 26,405. Is that your seat doing that? Oh, okay. It kind of worried me there. I was, you know, who's your friend there? 25,003. And now I'm going to flip you over to the document camera. Oh, God. Ooh. I thought there I was having a flashback. Oh, the 60s were good. No, seriously, I mean, I almost hurled there for a second. Okay, now let me just really quickly get that delta on that, okay? The delta, percent delta, which would be, in that case, it would be 26,405 less 25,003 all divided by 25,003. 26,405 less 25,003 all divided by 25,003. 14,002 divided by 1402 divided by 25,003. Let's try that again. 5.61%. And that's a positive. And you might want to put pluses because sometimes there'll be minuses in these as well. So in other words, revenues grew 5.6%, a little better than 5.5% growth in revenues year over year. Now, always think, well, that sounds good, but you would probably also want to say, well, what was inflation running at the consumer level during that period? What? Maybe about 1.2%, 1.5%. We could check some numbers at the Treasury. So that's not quite as spectacular as it looks because that's nominal value. So there was some inflation increase in there, too. You'd have to adjust out. But still, they grew. And as long as you're growing, you're still alive. Okay, now I'm going to also write down the net income. Let me flip back over here. So the net income, just to get that one on the board, 12,506 against 847. Dag. 12,506. 12,506 against 847. Okay, let's get the growth in net income. Growth in net income. 12,506 less 847, close the parentheses, divided by 847. Is that right? Whoa! Okay, 12,506 minus 847, that is robust, divided by 847. 48.29%. Is that what you get? Now understand that I actually have this table filled out on my flash drive in my office. But what I always want to do is have you see what happens as I do this. This thinking, the reactions of an analyst as he goes through this kind of stuff. And in that case, I am giving you an honest, well, damn, that's what we call back on the farm a hog spanker. You had your revenues grow modestly at best, but your net just took a shot. If I didn't know better, I'd swear net income popped some meth. So that would tell me, at least as a first pass, they really did some serious control on cost over that period. They were able to keep their revenues growing. The question for me would be, how would they have cut costs like that? A couple of things, they might have discovered that China sells a lot of good stuff that they can resell at a markup. But what also tells me is that they probably did some closing of stores or consolidation of operations. But they didn't go crazy closing stuff. They closed stuff that genuinely wasn't generating a lot of extra revenue. So the revenues didn't grow spectacularly because they probably lost some of their stores that were generating revenue. But at the same time, they sure saved themselves on cost. That would be one guess that I would have just going forward. This is part of that critical thinking that we want you to be able to do when you come out of here. Think about what really is going on behind the numbers. And if you're in accounting, you don't have to worry about this. Oh, that was harsh. I can't. Yes, I can. Okay, now let's do gross margin. 10667. Oh. I did something wrong here. Let me point out something here. They're using the term gross margin. Now, typically, we would call that gross profit and reserve the term gross margin for the ratio of gross profit to sales. So here you're seeing a deviation in terminology that's pretty notable. When you see what I've got on my financial analysis worksheet there, that row for gross margin, I intend that to be sales over gross profit. But gross profit is what they're calling gross margin there. So follow with me. I'm going to do the ratio gross margin, treating what they're calling gross margin as their gross profit. So the next cell there, gross margin 2011. Gross margin 2011, what I'm going to do for that one is take gross profit, that number you see there, 10667, and divide it by sales to get that worksheet entry there. And I'm going to flip it over, 10667 divided by 26405. And I'm going to get, flipping you over to the document camera now, you're going to get, will he quit doing that for God's sake? Sorry, a 40.40%. Now remember, two decimal places. Whether it's a percentage, notice that what I've got here starting out are percentages. Later on, the numbers aren't going to be percentages, they're going to be factors. Okay, now, talk to me. Give me a simple explanation. I'm from Decatur. I don't understand this kind of stuff. I can't do that. Yes, I can. Okay, I'm from Lincoln. Naperville, that's where I'm from. I don't know, sorry, God, people, you know, really? I like Naperville, I've been arrested there. Okay, nice jail. Okay, Explain what that number means there, that 40.40%.
It's the amount that you increased.
Not increased. No increase or decrease there. It's okay. That's okay. I'm giving some. I'm making you sweat, woman. You.
Is it the difference between how much you actually keep and how much you generate?
Not bad for a first pass. Let me give you a quickie way of saying it. Look, 40 cents of every dollar I kept after the wholesale price of my merchandise. My merchandise cost me 60 cents of every dollar I sold it for. That's what it says. You see why I say about 60 cents. You know, because that is really, that cost of goods sold, that's the cost of that awesome shirt, okay, that awful shirt that you're wearing. If it costs a dollar, it costs me 60 cents. So you pay me a dollar, I kept 40 cents. That's what it's saying. On average, across all of my sales, I kept 40 cents of every dollar I sold, of every dollar that came in, after I paid my wholesalers. That's what it says. Go ahead.
So you're saying it's 40% markup, basically?
No, actually, it wouldn't quite work that way. So think about it, okay? If I bought the shirt for 60 cents, okay, and I sell it for a dollar, what's my markup? I marked it up 40 cents on a 60 cents, right? So what's 40 divided by 60? It's 67%. My average markup is 67%. Percentages are really screwed up that way. It's not exactly what you think, but yeah, see, because clearly for the average thing that I sold for a buck, it cost me 60 cents to buy it. If I sold it for a buck, I must have marked it up 40 cents. 40 cents on 60 cents is a 2/3 markup. So that's why it's a little more than you might think. It's not a 40% markup. It's actually a 67% markup. So that's why sometimes, especially in business, people will see how much dollar amount you've marked something up, and they'll just have a fit. Look at you. You're ripping people off with how much. 40 cents on a 60 cent, you know, and all that. But actually, it's not as bad as you think it is because really, you know, that's your cost of paying for everything after the wholesale. So that 40 cents, that's got to pay your employees, your light bills, capital improvements, the whole nine yards across the company. That 40 cents that I kept after I bought the shirt for 60 cents, that's essentially what there is for me to run my company with. So the same thing would apply. For example, I got this really nice series of framed photographs that I'm going to be selling for the Christmas season. Now, the price of them is $200 a piece. And someone came into my office, look at that. You know, what did you pay for that? Like $50? Actually, that was way more than it was. But the thought, you have to think about it this way. Every dollar over the price that I pay for it has to be what I eat from, what everything that runs the company comes off that number right there, that 40 cents on every dollar. That's it. That's the end of it. So on average, this company kept 40 cents. And then we'll go, let me do the other one here now too. Let me flip back over there to the filing statement and get the one for gross profit, 10179. Let me do 10179. Well, let's turn on the calculator. 10179 divided by sales 25003, 40.71. 40.71. Sorry about that, that's a little off there. Now let me do something. Let's do something kind of interesting here. Let me look at my change in gross margin, which would be 40 point. Well, in parentheses, 40.40 minus 40.71 close those parentheses, divided by, 40.71, close those parentheses, divided by 40.71. Ooh, well, spank me. A slight drop in gross margin, very slight. It's almost not enough for me to worry about. It's right on the borderline of what would worry me and what would not worry me. You know, it's less than a percent drop in the gross margin. And so, you know, 0.75% drop, but it is a drop. And that would tell me that they face some upward pressure at the wholesale level for their merchandise. Just a little edge of an upward pressure. Where would I guess that that would, one reason, I mean, I could speculate all day. Where I would guess is that once China started trying to pretend that it was no longer pegging its currency, the currency did strengthen slightly against the dollar. And that would indicate that you would be, if you were dependent upon a lot of made in China stuff, you'd pay a little more for it. Pay a little more for it. That might be what's happening, what's going on there, is that Macy's is facing a little bit of upward price pressure in international purchases of cheap stuff. And so that's why they lost just a slight bit of ground there. I'll get a little more worried if I see in the next year that this number is, their gross margin is still eroding, or if they're beginning able to find new markets where they can get decent prices at the wholesale level. Moving down the line here, to the grinder. I'm going to look at the operating margin. That's their operating profit, which Macy's calls operating income. And again, notice how the terminology is just all over the place from one company to the other. The operating income here is 24.11. And so I'm going to take 24.11 divided by 26.405. 24.11 divided by 26,405. And I'll get an operating margin of 9.13%. Make sure you get that. 9.13% operating margin on fiscal 2011. Now I'm going to be really interested in what it was for 2010. Let me do the 2010 here. It's 1894 divided by 25003. Oh yeah, there you go. 7.58%. I'm not going to look at that. Okay. Now, that somewhat confirms what I was suspecting before, that they had cut costs in the intermediate layer of the income statement. You see why now their revenues rose modestly, but their net income rose robustly? You see it? The operating margin has risen considerably. Now, if I work that out, the delta on these two operating margins from 10 to 11, I would get 9.13% minus 7.58%, and then I would divide that by 7.58%. And I get, oh yeah, there we go, 20.45%. And that's a positive. You see how they firmed up their operating margin they cut costs in that central layer. They cut costs in that middle layer there. In here, that's what's made their net income go up so strongly, even though their sales rose not that spectacularly at all. So this is something, the question is, can they keep doing that? One problem with this is that you have to think about it this way. They really firmed up their operating margin and their net, but they did that by cutting costs, closing stores, getting rid of employees, all those things that the Wall Street boys tell you to do to get your operations back in order so the fund managers will buy your stock and make it go up in price and make your shareholders happy. They did that. How long can they keep doing that? There's only so long you can firm up operating and net in the absence of robust growth in sales. So the question is, what's Macy's going to do from here? Are they going to just cut more stores out, fire more employees, or are they going to get their major shit together and start growing their revenue base? That's what I want to see for 2012. Are you now getting off the bandwagon of chopping costs, and are you learning how to sell your goods again? You're a fine store, show it. Get people to come into the store and don't just offer sale, sale, sale just to get hoe handles into your store. Find a reason for people to get brand and store brand loyalty. But anyway, that's how I get harsh when I do this and I'm talking to company officials. Well, that's wonderful what you've done here. Yes, you got a really nice jump in net income. You got a nice jump in net margin. And I know why you did it. Now let's see you do something that's really, really weird, you know, like run your business and sell your product. But, you know, that's just me being old-fashioned. Net margin. Net margin is net income divided by sales. So through the grinder, the net margin, we're going to have net income of 12,56 divided by 26,405. You're going to get a 4.76% net margin. 4.76% net margin for 2011. Now going over to 2010, your net income was 847 against sales of 2503. I can't even remember a number long enough to go to my calculator, for God's sake. 847 divided by 2503 is a 3.39%. Net margin. Strong upswing. So let's talk about the delta on that. 4.76 less 3.39, all that divided by 3.39. That should be a nice, yep. 40.41% growth in net. Growth in net margin. Yeah, strong growth in net margin. You know, that's great. But like I said, that's a one-trick pony. You know, well, at best, a trick and a half, two tricks, three tricks. Sooner or later, though, they can't cut their costs anymore. Typically, companies keep cutting. They begin to get into this. Here's an interesting thing. Let me see. Madam, have you ever killed anybody? Okay, now, let's pretend you did. You know, the first person you kill is really, really a tough thing. You know, you see someone, you know, that was a human soul, and probably had kids, and you know, now his kids are orphans. It really messes you up. It really does. But hey, he had a gun. By the time you get to like your 50th, it's really, really not much of an issue anymore. Okay? And you do it, and then sometimes you kind of go overboard. Yeah, the student was jaywalking. He didn't need to die, but, you know, what the hell? I'm okay with it. But, you know, that's 50, okay, 250, something like that. You see, you get comfortable with doing the thing that is supposed to be drastic, supposed to be crazy, supposed to be over the top or desperate to do. But you serial killer, now you just killed people. I mean, he farted and you killed him. What the hell, you know? Great, now he's dead and he's really farting. You know, no muscle control, you know. Anyway, I promise you, giving examples like this, you remember it longer. But you see, here's the deal. When you're a corporation, the first time you start slashing stores, it's a real difficult process. The first time you start laying off employees, good employees, strong work ethic, that's hard to do. The first time you start screwing over your suppliers by saying, no, we're not going to pay it. We're just going to default. What are you going to do? We know you can't sue us. Screw you. When you start and you start bullying suppliers, I don't want your price. You're going to have to bring it down or I'm going to put you out of business because I know I'm your only purchaser. You bully them and then they end up having to lay people off. First time you do that kind of stuff, it is really hard. But if you just keep doing it, it gets too easy. And you get to the point where that becomes your reaction to to your sales not growing very well. Ah, let's cut another couple of stores. And by the time you're over, you've cut into the meat of your company, you've cut into the core business infrastructure. Not just in terms of brick and mortar, but in terms of employees. You're getting rid of employees with memory, with knowledge of the operations. And so the one thing that I caution is give a rah-rah the first time you shoot somebody, good one. But by the time you get to the point where, you know, you're like axe murdering your family because of issues, you know, from childhood, they didn't buy you the Cabbage Patch doll you wanted, you know, that's, you know, then you've gone too far. So there you go. Then that's what I would caution you about here. Yeah, we see some spectacular stuff going on here, but a real analyst, an old bitch like me, is going to say, okay, what do you do for your next trick? Because you've done something spectacular. You set yourself on fire to do this. Oh, you can't do that again because now you're already rather crispy, you know? Did you hear that about Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader? Darth Vader said to Obi-Wan during their lightsaber battle, "You are toast, Obi-Wan." And you know what Obi-Wan said back? "Yes, but I prefer mine not quite so much on the dark side." The hell with you. You know, go to hell. Where the hell? Okay, let's go on here. ROA. Let's do the net income over total assets. Now we're going to go back here. I'm going to have to dig around here a little bit for. Oh, there. Thank goodness. Balance sheet's right there. Okay, ROA. Our total assets are 22,095 against. So we got net of 1,256 against total assets of 22,095. So we'll just take 1256.
For total assets, that's 2012.
Did I look? It's fiscal. Their fiscal year ends into this year. Okay, a little tiny bit. But it's still the 2011 data. This is the 10K for 2011. I'm glad you brought that up because I saw it. That's a really weird fiscal year ending. That's odd. I don't see that too often. I like calendar year, fiscal year, but that's really creepy. But I'm glad you pointed that out because it really is the 2011. It's about all we can do for it, you know. 2011, 2011 was net income was $1,256 divided by total assets of $22,095 gives us a 5.68% return on assets. Oh God, I'm going to make a prediction here. Help me. I'm almost wondering if their ROA is going to be higher in 2010. Let me try it. 2010, we would have had net income of... Why am I having a hard time here? Oh, geez. 847 against 2631. 847 against 2641, was it? 31. 31. Nope. 4.11. It's not what I thought. 4.11% ROA. Just make sure you can get that. Now, ROE. Net income against shareholders' equity. So we got net income, 1256, and we'll pull it down here, 1256 against total shareholders' equity. There's the line. Part of what I'm doing here, by the way, is showing you how to work back and forth and find what you're looking for in financials. Begin to get comfortable with that process. So we've got net income was 1256. Try to remember two things. 1256, 5933. 1256, 5933. Hey, 21.70%. You should get 21.70% for 2011. 21.17. You're right. I just did that to see if you were watching what I was doing. And that's good, you did. I'm glad. I was worried that you wouldn't see that. Oh, okay, hell with it. Okay, now net... On the next one, 847 against 847 against 5530. 847 against 5530. 847, 5530. I'm getting 15.32%. About. Now let me take you over to the, tell me when to stop, there. Now let me get the deltas on these, and I'm going to do them real quick here. 5.68 less 4.11, all divided by 4.11. I get a 38.20% jump in ROA, and ROE, we get 21.17 less 15.32, all divided by 15.32, and I get 38.. Well, there's some symmetry in the universe. ROA and ROE both rose better than a third. Good news. Really strong news. Now, I want to go and just at least get these 3, current, quick, and burn. The burn is the one you won't find in the book. Current, the current ratio is nothing but current assets over current liabilities. Current assets over current liabilities. So I'm going to take current assets over current liabilities. Current assets, 8777 divided by current liabilities, which are 6263. And I get this number. I get, and I'm going to switch you over here. I apologize for jumping back and forth. Ha! I figured out how I can tell. So I get a 1.40. This is not a percentage. This is a factor. So the units of measure are a time symbol. What the current ratio tells you is how many times over your current assets could pay the current liabilities. In this company's case, if it liquidated all of its current assets at book, it could cover all of its current liabilities at book 140%, 1.4 times over. That's great. Except that that doesn't tell us a whole lot, because the reality of it is that if you were really hard up, you had all of your current liabilities, you had to get rid of them today, some of your current assets are not going to get you hardly anything right away or probably ever. Specifically, your inventory is going to suck. You're going to have odd lots, and all these other companies come in and buy it up, pennies on the dollar. So the next ratio we do is called the acid test, or the quick ratio. And you want to put there beside it the word quick, write acid, because the old school term is acid test. Get the inventory out. Take your current assets, subtract out the inventory, and then see how many times over you can cover your liability, your current liabilities. So in that case, what's going to happen when I look at this mother or this thing again? I'm going to say, all right, take your current assets, 8777, and take away your inventory, which in this case is 5117, a huge amount because this is a retail store. 5177. What's left is $3,600. Divide that by your current liabilities, 6263. And your time, your current ratio drops to 0.57 times. 0.57 times. In other words, if you take your... Did I just have a stroke? Oh, okay. If you take out the inventory, you can't pay your current liability. You could pay half of your current liabilities, about. If it got down, you had to pull the money out of your ass today, you're going to pull half-assed. Now let's talk about... Let's get real. My Italian friend told me a joke. It's a Chicago joke. How many union men does it take to screw in a light bulb? 12. You got a problem with that? Anyway. Okay. Now, we're going to do not mobsters in that sense. We're going to do... Okay. You owe me $1,000, okay? Now you got all these current assets, all these things that are in your little balance sheet that are current, liquidatable. Theoretically, you can get rid of them really quickly. But realistically, I come to your door, knock, knock, Oh my God, it's Professor C. I want my money. I've got all this stuff. No, I don't want that stuff. Your accounts receivable, a factoring company is going to take a week to get in here to pay for your accounts receivable. That inventory of yours, it's ugly. I want my money now. And you know what's going to happen if I don't have my money now? I'm going to give you a wedgie. And I'm not talking about any kind of wedgie. I'm talking about one that will give you a rash. Okay. That means that the only thing that you have that you can really honestly rely on to pay my current liability that is due me is what is in your wallet, the money. That's why this old, old ratio, the burn ratio, is still relevant to this day. Is all it does is say how much cash divided by what your current liabilities. In other words, if the house burned down and you were about to get a wedgie, how much could you come out of your pocket? Take your cash and marketable securities and divide them by your current liabilities. So I would take my cash, just the most liquid thing I've got, cash and cash equivalents, they sometimes call that marketable securities, 2827, and I divide that by my current liabilities, 6263, times. I looked too soon. Okay. So in other words, if they really did have to pay all their current liabilities off today, they would have less than half of the money on hand that they could pull out of their pocket to do it. Now, that's not, the burn ratios are brutal because they are often, they're oftentimes well below one, and they probably should be. But at the same time, the next thing is you look at the gradient, what we call the liquidity gradient in this company. And this is a little bit more sophisticated. The liquidity gradient is a concept of how fast their liquidity falls off. See, this is everything that's a current asset paying the current liabilities. This is the stuff that you could probably get rid of in a week to pay your current liabilities. This is the stuff that you could get rid of today to pay your current liabilities. So the liquidity gradient sort of gives you an idea of how steep the fall is. You notice that this is a retailer. So the fall is going to be pretty heavy on the current to asset. The current to asset because a retailer will have a lot of its current assets in inventory. But then it's more interesting with a retailer, what happens from the asset to the burn. And in this case, the asset to the burn is not that bad. If I had the burn drop down to 0.25, I'd be more worried. Here, it looks like once we take out the inventory, the rest of their asset, current asset base is pretty strong. Now, here's what I want you to do for Monday. I want you to finish this table up for Monday. And then I'm going to give you a copy for you to write down your answers and turn in as a quiz. So you finish this up for Macy's, okay? Don't worry about that third column because some of the data. But that's what I want you to do. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.